This is the Love FOCO Show.
We have a lot of resources. That's another beautiful thing about Fort Collins, another beautiful thing about our area. I can resource families with housing needs, with furniture, with Christmas gifts, with Thanksgiving. I mean, look at the SNAP issues that we had and how many people across Fort Collins. It was beautiful to see that would step up and offer resources to these families. But what we noticed is like, how are our 9-to-5 families getting to that resource during 9-to-5 hours?
Welcome to the Love FOCO Show. Our podcast highlights the incredible people who make Fort Collins the place we're proud to call home. Each week, your host, Jeff Faust, sits down with local leaders, community champions, and changemakers to share their stories, what they love about our city, and how they're helping it thrive. So whether you're out on the trail, at a brewery, or walking through Old Town, thanks for tuning in.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Love FOCO Show. I'm your host, Jeff Faust, excited to share a conversation with you today from Safe Families for Colorado. Sitting down with the chapter leader, Roxy, this morning. She's an incredible woman. She's been on a wild journey from small town South Dakota through a few different stops all the way here to Fort Collins. And the work she is doing to care for children and keep families together is incredible. I can't wait to share this conversation with you. And my hope is that as you hear her story and the work that she is doing, you will be compelled to get involved in one way or another. With that, let's jump into the conversation for this morning. Well, Roxy, thank you so much for being willing to spend time on the Love FOCO Show, our new podcast, where we're just interviewing all kinds of different folks who are making a difference in our city. I'm so grateful for the work that you're doing. Really looking forward to kind of digging into that a bit together and allowing you to share your story with whoever's listening. But we start every podcast the same way. I just want to ask you kind of how you found Fort Collins. What's your origin story? I mean, were you born and raised here? Or did you transplant in? Like, where'd you come from? And what are you up to?
So first of all, thank you for having me here. It's always an honor to be able to share primarily my passion and the work that I'm doing and get the word out there. So I'm really thankful that you invited me here this morning. Thankful for the work you're doing to share what's going on in Fort Collins with everybody. So my origin story, so I'm not originally from Colorado at all. So I came from Mitchell, South Dakota. And I always kind of...
You say Mitchell, South Dakota, like people know where Mitchell is. I think you could just probably say South Dakota.
Well, I always like...
I'm not trying to like rub it in or anything, but I think South Dakota is fine. Where's Mitchell at? I have no idea.
I always like to make a little joke after that because it's home of we called it the largest bird feeder. It's a palace they decorate with corn.
That sounds like something a Midwest state would put.
So I wanted to give the visualization to listeners. So yeah, that's where I'm from. It's a smaller community, lived rural most of my life, grew up riding horses, pretty quiet life. Parents, both very, very hard workers. Dad usually worked during the day, mom worked at night. So, you know, we were kind of, what did they call them? Latchkey kids, you know, pretty much. Parents were really, really hard workers. And then I moved to Colorado when I was in my 20s in the 90s. I always joke that I started south and I'm moving north. And if it wasn't for the Wyoming wind, I'd probably be there.
Yeah.
So I lived down Florence, Canyon City, that area, because my brother was in the military.
Okay.
Moved here to be closer to him, closer to family, kind of spread my wings a little bit. Wasn't ready to go to college right after high school. Kind of, to be honest, was kind of testing out being independent and where I wanted to be in my life. So started there, moved to Colorado Springs.
Was there something like from growing up in Mitchell, South Dakota to Colorado? Was there something that like was the unction to, was it just graduating and now I'm an adult, so I'm going to move? Or was there?
I really didn't like the rural communities, the smaller communities with not a lot to do. even today, I have to be pretty active. My husband says I don't allow for much downtime. But so I ended up first going to Minnesota and then Colorado, kind of checked out Minneapolis, the Twin Cities for a while, worked as a nurse's aide in the Twin Cities at a Jewish nursing home, Shalom Home, and then moved to Southern Colorado, stayed down there for a while, moved to Colorado Springs, spent a few years there, moved to Denver, spent a few years there. When I went to go to college for my bachelor's degree, I transferred from Denver Community College up to the University of Northern Colorado. So that which lands me up north, and got my degree in psychology from UNC. And after that, I always had a heart. Even when I was a little kid, my dad told me not too long ago, he goes, you always wanted to help other kids and other families.
Where do you think that came from? Because I heard, I mean, just a quick recap, I mean, correct me if I'm missing any piece, but you said nursing in Minnesota and then a psychology degree in your 20s. So as you trace that, I mean, like, where did those early seeds come from, you think?
So my grandparents were both said laid a good foundation of faith for me. And I think I always joke, it was something my one of my grandmothers said, my maternal grandmother said to me when I was in kind of around my teen years, like, Roxy, you can't be kind to everybody. And I'm like, but grandma, that's what God told us to do. She's like, but, you know, like those teenage no boundaries, I'm going to be kind to even, you know, people. She's like, but you got to rein it in a little bit. So I always kind of had this heart to want to care for others, this passion to...
Did that ever burn you growing up?
Oh yeah.
Overextend yourself or get taken advantage of, or because this is like, this is always the common pushback that you hear when you're in compassionate space, like, don't overextend yourself, don't help too much. And it's like, this is part of the territory. Like, you give and you give and you give, and sometimes you're going to get hit. But
I would say as a younger adult, it burned me a lot because I didn't have a lot of great resilience or boundaries, or, you know, I was just a natural empath to want to help. And the people that I would pick would be the ones that needed me the most. And sometimes you can get burned even younger. But I never really wanted to stop helping others. That's kind of what at the core of who I was. I also see it in my little 12-year-old. Like, I always worry about her heart, knowing what I went through growing up being that way. This last year, and not to digress from the main question, but this last year we took in three little boys, and my daughter's heart, I'm like, oh my, she's got the same heart I did. And I pray, Lord, protect her little heart. Because as you're younger, you know, if you're born with that heart, and you know, our foundation is from that heart to care for others and love others. You just pray that the Lord.
There does seem to be like a really sweet temperament and personality that God just bestows on some people who are going to operate in this space, right? I mean, I think it's interesting to me though, because I'm sure you know people the same way. You maybe overextended, maybe you got burned a few times, and you stayed in that space. We probably both know people who have been burned and have then stepped away from that space. And so that's always really interesting to me. I mean, you might not have a great answer, but I'm curious if you know.
Well,
it sounded
like
it was a core piece of your identity that kept you.
There was a pivot in my life in my later 20s into 30s. I did sales for a long time. I'm really, really good at it. Because one, I'm a galvanizer, and I also am really personable. So for
what
sales.
What did you sell?
It was interesting. So I was a single mom for a while. Story to that is I needed a job that was really flexible. I was also going to school at the same time. So single mom of two boys. And I started working for my best friend's brother's. He did door-to-door meat sales. His business was. And so I started doing that down in Colorado Springs.
That's a tough gig.
It is a tough gig. It's hard to knock on somebody's door blindly and ask them.
You're knocking at a door and it's like a 50-50 shot. They don't want you there. Maybe it's worse than 50-50.
I think a lot of times, and then, you know, you're trying to sell, like, I remember, do you like steak? And they'd be like, oh, slam the door in your face. And the first time I did it, I was like, I don't know about all this.
Roxy, I love this so much. Because I was in sales for a little while too. I sold doors and windows for Pella Corporation, small little town in Iowa. Again, you know,
Midwest.
You have to put it on the map because people don't know where it's at, but Pella Doors and Windows are made in Pella, Iowa. I worked for them for a while.
I didn't know that.
Between ministry jobs, I found out a couple of things. One, the paychecks when you are in a commission sales position are a lot better than nonprofit paychecks. I remember that distinctly. And and two, I remember walking away thinking, I want every one of my kids to be a salesperson for at least 12 months.
Yeah.
Just to learn, like, how do I have conversations? How do I handle rejection? How do I ask for referrals? How do I navigate in these different social spaces? Because it just, it shapes you in a different kind of way.
It does.
And it prepares you for fundraising if you ever have to fundraise.
Oh, yeah. So. And the, you have had to do some of that too.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, so I pivoted to sales for a little bit, started my, actually out of his business, I started my own business while I was going to school. So that left it to where I could basically work on the weekends, go to school during the week, be home with my kids.
Yep.
And so that was a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Single moms just know how to do it, don't they?
Yeah.
They
yeah.
just know how to. My mom was a single mom for a while. And the stories she tells about the way she figured out how to kind of grind out a living, take care of kids while she's still trying to be promote. I mean, shout out to all the single parents out there. And not just moms, single dads too. But there is a different kind of grit that you that you have to make it work.
Mm-hmm. And it that just like sales, it teaches you a lot. Like in my career now, I'm able to truly empathize and wear the shoes that some of our single dads that we work with, our single moms that we work with, I understand what it feels like. I can feel that PTSD sometimes of like, oh, what if I can't make this bill this month? What do I cut out? And so that was also another, I always give credit to God through those things. Cause I think, you know, the valleys that he took me through grew me to where I'm at today. And gave me the ability to really be present and understand what I'm doing today.
Yeah.
So I'm always really thankful for some of those struggles. So after the sales career, graduated, I was late bloomer. I graduated from college at UNC in 2014, got my psychology degree. Had just welcomed my youngest daughter to the world. Me and my husband have a blended family of 6 kids all together. 9, if you count the 3 we just fostered.
Yeah.
So we've got our own baseball team.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about a different kind of vehicle at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, you gotta buy one of the big vans. But, you can't all fit in
Honda
the,
Pilot.
Yeah.
Biggest we could find. Anyways, so when I welcomed her, I started reaching out to different places to kind of dabble in where did I want to be involved. I knew I wanted to work with families. I knew I wanted to work, impact the lives of children. Even when I did sales, I had a connection with the families that I'd built relationship with and their children. I'd bring their children little gifts. We'd hang out. You know, it was just this relationship that I was building even in the sales world. And so I carried that over. And the first job I got, actually, this is my Fort Collins story.
Yeah.
So the first job I got was right here in Fort Collins with Larimer County Child Protection.
Okay.
So I started out in their hub, what they call their hub, Midpoint Drive, just taking the referrals that come into child protection with concerns. And it wasn't too long. I started in September of 2014. And in that December, got promoted or did a different job in what they call after hours casework. And so what I would do was go out nights and weekends when the day shift workers have gone home and go out to those referrals that we get that either can't wait till the next morning because of safety concerns or over the weekend, they can't wait till Monday. And so that's really where I started my career and my calling, where God started working on what my purpose was to all these things that led up to it.
Yep.
Wonderful people at Larimer County still have a lot of wonderful relationships there. And I think that's another thing God put into place for where we're at, where I'm at, where Safe Families is right now. But worked there for 8 years in total. After hours team, I did full-time daytime intake for a while. Realized that was a little bit, that job is like to give Larimer County Child Protection workers a lot of credit. It is a hard job.
Well, I mean, that's what's, it's just interesting to me. I mean, I have so many questions over even just that last little timeline. I want to talk about 2 of them.
Okay.
If we can. One, because you've referenced faith and your relationship with God a few different times. I'd love to I'd love to talk about how faith has maybe impacted your identity and what you're doing in our community. We'll talk about that in a moment. The first question I have is a similar question that I asked Chief Swoboda when I interviewed him and talking about police services, because when you're in this space, you see things that the average human maybe doesn't see or encounter on a daily basis. Tragedy, pain, things that could make you cry and things that could make you rage all in the same day. How do you care for yourself in the midst of that? Because you can also have like prolonged trauma exposure that can do things to your mind and your heart. So when you were in that space and seeing cases and clients, and what did you do to keep your heart tender and compassionate? Because you know, by your own court, like you still have that alive and in you. How did that not get jaded or even like a little crusty on the outside, I guess?
A little crispy is what we called it. You know, you get a little burnt. Interesting enough, got into that work. I remember the supervisor that I had, she was amazing. And I remember asking her after something that I went on that, I mean, most Fort Collins people are like, not in our town. It didn't happen in our town.
They just
town.
Don't think it happens, right?
And the hard thing is, as a caseworker or like Chief Swoboda, you can't really go out and share it all. So it is eye-opening. So other people see what you're seeing and want to get involved. But I remember telling her, I said, you know, how when I go home in the middle of the night, 3-4 o'clock in the morning after doing that, do I go to sleep?
Right.
Like the body experience that I was having, like cold and I can't warm up. And, you know, I would start praying, but my mind was all over the place, you know, and she goes, sometimes I just have to turn on golf. If you can find some golf.
Hey.
Yeah, something. And
something
I'm
about
sorry,
it.
All the golf fans in the world, but but it was just something to kind of calm your brain.
Right.
For me, a lot of prayer in the middle of the night. A lot of times when we did have to go out in the middle of the night, that meant you were removing somebody's child from them.
Okay.
Which is probably the toughest conversation you could imagine having. Because it doesn't mean that that child doesn't love mom or dad, and it doesn't mean mom and dad don't love them. It just means that there's a concern that we can't mitigate. And for me, it broke my heart in the moment. And then I had to imagine what it did to the child and to the family. And those things were really, really hard. And in those situations, my prayer was always, Lord, please bring somebody that can step in for these kids. Please have this, you know, because come Monday or come the next morning, I would share that and we would talk about what that next step looked like, whether that's long-term foster care, which the stats from foster care, you know, I don't know if you know them, but 400,000 kids in the system, 70% are thought to be there because of neglect, 100,000 kids waiting to be adopted. You know, for my heart, I didn't want kids to go into care. I wanted to see if we could find somebody to step in and mitigate the circumstances so they didn't have to go that route. Another stat that I share that's pretty powerful is I think the nationwide statistic for foster care return home rates, so kids going back into homes with parents, is about 47%. I think Colorado's a bit higher at 52 or 57, somewhere in there. But for me, that's like a 50-50 shot you're going to go back home.
Yeah.
And for me, like for a lot of these families, like we talk single parents, right? For a lot of these families that were in crisis to get my phone call, you know, for me to show up, they were already struggling to keep the roof over their heads, the car under, you know, the car back and forth to work, the bills paid. And now they have a whole court date and, you know, additional treatment plan of steps they have to complete to again then have their kids return home. And once that process is started, it's hard to slow it down. And so for me, that's kind of where God started to grow my heart on, you know, what, and I didn't even know it. You know, sometimes God's working on things we don't even have any clue he's going to ask us to step into. And that's where that started coming
where
from.
Where'd your faith come from originally? I mean, was this something that happened later in life, or it sounded, you alluded to your grandparents establishing a good foundation.
Both my grandparents were very, very, planted that foundation for me. As a little girl, I remember spending a summer with my grandmother. and sitting on her front porch. I took a picture of her house not too long ago in the church right next door, Methodist church right next door. And I remember her teaching me the Lord's Prayer on the front step. And my other grandmother, you know, sending us to, she was Lutheran, and she'd send us to all our, you know, VBS camps and Bible camps. And I remember her playing the piano at church. My dad went back and forth. He struggled. Right now, his faith is really, really solid, which is great because he's struggling with a cancer diagnosis. Oh. And kind of my story plays into where he's at with his faith. So that foundation was always planted. My mom was big at having us do VBS and things like that. I would say, honestly, though, it ebbed and flowed. Like, when I left and went to Minnesota, angry with God, my parents had just gotten divorced. I was upset at them. I was upset at God. You know, you're at that age where you're like, no, I'm not upset, but you're upset.
Yeah. Yep.
And so that starts to play out. Like even for me, like I dabbled in partying and, you know, other avenues to try to find joy and happiness. But always I would be pulled back to that foundation. Always, like in every hard point of my life, my parents' divorce. I when I moved to Denver and struggling there and being on my own, graduating college, God was always there with me.
It's just a very human story. You know, I mean, this is like so many of our stories, ups and downs, being drawn towards God, and then us, you know, sometimes receiving that love, sometimes rejecting it. I think a lot about how often God receives our misdirected anger, and yet he still loves, and yet he still welcomes us, and yet he still invites us to the table. And we can be angry and frustrated about all kinds of things that are even worth being angry about. And we can often misdirect that at the one who's trying to shower us with his unfailing love.
Yeah.
And he's just so good at managing, you know, our tantrums, I guess, and still showing us his unending grace.
Well, it kind of frees us too, because it shows us how we can be in relationship with others. It's okay.
Right.
It's okay. You know, I thought of that as you were saying that, the Josiah Queen song. It's stuck in my head the last few days. Watch your mouth, boy. You know, because he's getting angry with God, and he's like, don't you remember what I did for you?
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
It's good. Sounds like a modern day psalm.
Yes.
You know, it's like being able to pen out your frustrations and then hear from the Lord.
Yeah. And nowadays we have me and my friend, one of my friends that I had two good friends during my single mom era that were also single moms. And I remember me and her talking early on into when I started working for Safe Families, and we don't stay as connected as we used to, but we were talking about how God took us through all these valleys and really realizing the things he taught us in each one of those moments, and really reflecting on how God equipped us to be now as adults. And you know, granted, in those moments, it felt like, I remember, you know, standing in the line at the Medicaid office and then, you know, going to the next place and not knowing, you know, if my, you know, car breaks down, how are you going to get to work? What took me into my sales gig with my friend's brother was actually getting sick as I was waiting to be promoted at a job that was really strict on attendance. I didn't get sick. My son got sick, and not being able to take him to daycare and losing my job. Right. And thinking the world's going to end. But then reflecting back on all those things and what God had and where he took it, you know, you just never know.
Oh, that's so good. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing part of that journey with me
and
with all of our listeners. I find myself, I just fascinated by everyone's story and how it just kind of meanders us through life. And then at least this podcast, we're all talking with folks in Fort Collins and Northern Colorado area. You were here and you had expressed an 8-year career at Larimer County. Is that right?
Two of them overlapped with Safe Families.
Okay. And while you're on that journey, I always like to ask people, like, what helped you fall in love with this city? Because you're being exposed to a lot of even tragic things and things that, you know, when you close your eyes at night, keep you awake and hard to kind of even neurologically slow down and your nervous system to calm down. There had to be other things that were happening to keep you here this long. So like, how'd you start falling in love with the city? What do you love about Fort Collins?
So when I moved up this way, I could make a Greeley joke. We were in the Greeley neighborhood, and there, you know, I remember being like, what am I?
That wind blows the right direction.
My soon-to-be husband being like, welcome to the north.
Yes.
But I remember when I landed in Fort Collins, started my career at Larimer County, just reflecting on how wonderful people were. Like, even the county, like, that call, like, oh, you're sick, or there was no punishment.
A little bit like Mitchell, South Dakota?
It did.
Just a little hometown feel. A little bit,
and especially as I grew in the community, like, I will say, after the county work, really doing Safe Families, like, we're in a bigger area, but you feel so connected. And I tell this, Safe Families is a national organization. I talk about Northern Colorado all the time in this area, about how people watch out and take care of each other. I said this on another podcast I was on. The thing that is, like, beautiful, and I think we take for granted about where we live and the community we're in, is the partnerships. I mean, look at you know, I know Love Foco the resource center is coming about, and that is so awesome. I told you earlier about the Life Center that our office is in Loveland. Just the community impact that we can all have and the heart behind what we do. I have so many beautiful relationships with people that are resourcing families throughout Fort Collins and what they do. And they're just wonderful, beautiful people that are every day pulling up their bootstraps to care for their people in their community.
Yeah.
The churches I get blessed that I get to go out and my partners in this work are churches and community agencies that are serving youth and family, because what a beautiful world. I mean, I always feel like we sit in this beautiful circle of individuals that volunteer to show radical hospitality, intentional compassion, and disruptive generosity, and what better people to surround yourself with. It is just a joy. To give you a little bit of a picture of that, I recently, when I was doing kinship certification for the county, to be able to take care of the boys we took care of for the last year and a half, I remember sending in the training, and one of the questions they asked was, like, how much support do you have? Make a list. And some of the people in that class had really made some of their family mad by taking in kids, and they've gotten kind of like, they didn't have a lot of support. They had people mad at them because they took kids away from, you know, that type of situation. And I'm listing churches, and churches are providing us food and meal trains and grocery gift cards. And I have staff bringing me clothes, and I know of other resources for parents that are stepping into foster care and kinship care that I can get pretty much whatever I need. I have a bunch of volunteers offering to take the kids and do things with them almost every day. I could have been, like, resourced for childcare every single day.
Oh,
and
this,
I'm like,
is the best part of the faith community.
This is the community
of people who can make a difference in one another's lives. And those stories aren't always told.
Yeah.
Because sometimes the churches haven't always been as vocal, or haven't always been kind of in that space representing that kind of love. And so I'm super glad that's
really
been part of your testimony and the testimony of the greater Fort Collins area. I am amazed every week I meet people, this kind of interdependence, collaborative approach to solving problems, I think is going to set our community up for some real long-term success, and not only keeping our city amazing and helping people fall in love with it, but really impacting and changing lives. And so I would definitely resonate with that too.
That's been my prayer.
Well, I want to talk a lot about Safe Families. So you are the chapter leader, or is that that?
Yep.
Chapter leader. Is that the right title?
Yep.
And you had mentioned that this is part of a larger national organization as well. Mm-hmm. So just, like, take a few minutes and inform me and anyone listening about what Safe Families is, and then we'll follow some rabbit trails on the work that you're doing right now in Northern Colorado.
Safe Families, the national story, started in 2003 in Chicago with our founder, Dr. Dave Anderson, and his story. And I always say, I always hate to tell somebody else's story, because I don't want to discredit or butcher it, is what I referenced before. But his story was, he was kind of similar to me, definitely far more educated, but he was a child psychologist that worked with abused and neglected children. And he oftentimes would see things like I've seen, you know, children.
Just another hard profession. Because again, these are untold stories. Mm-hmm. Because children don't have power. Mm-hmm. You know, and so parents can cover those stories up. They can ignore those stories. Stories aren't always even seen maybe as reliable or credible.
Well,
and dismissed. And so
for the general public, sometimes we don't want to see it. We don't want to see those stories. We don't want to believe that that's happening in our community. Kind of like a protective measure. Like, not everybody wants to work in child welfare or child psychologist, working with abused and neglected children. But his story, his like light bulb was a couple different things. So the first one was this child that had been severely abused. I think a blown retinas, just some severe abuse. And he was really honest when he told it one of the first times I met him, that he was mad. He was upset at what happened. And I think, you know, for anybody in child protection, you can go out with that heart. And then your job is to find out what is the truth, what really did happen. And he went out and met with a mom. And it was, again, that single mom story that a lot of single parents struggle. We were naturally meant to parent as a two. And sometimes we just aren't. And, you know, and so she told him, you know, I had to get to work. I had to go to work. And so I called an ex-boyfriend and he watched my child, and this is what happened. And he thought, I think that was his first light bulb moment where he thought, wow, why are we waiting? And that was along with my story. Why are we waiting until something really bad happens to step in? Like, why can't we prevent this?
Right.
Me as a single mom, I had two other partners, other also single moms, lots of great family. I had a daycare provider that traded me daycare for me filling in for her. I mean, we just had these, God gave me these great relationships.
You had that relational network, and still hard, because when your son or daughter gets sick, do I stay home and care for my child who can't go to daycare? Now I'm not at work. I mean, there's constant trades that a single parent is having to make every day. And that, I love even just, what can we do in terms of preventative measures instead of always responding to crisis moments?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you guys are in that prevention space. Is that right?
Yep. Keep children safe and families together is kind of our one-liner.
Can you say that again?
Keep children safe and families together.
Keep children safe and families together.
Yep. And kind of another story that goes along with Dave's is his really big light bulb moment was a mother coming to him at Lydia home in Chicago where he worked and saying, can you please take my kids? I need some help. And it's like, we can't just take your kids. There was no avenue for that yet.
Yep.
And so when he went out and started to think, well, how can I do something about this? He jokes that Chicago started it because they wanted to do it before New York. The mayor was like, yeah, let's get it done before New York catches on. Kind of this camaraderie.
A little friendly competition.
This competition,
you know, can make a difference.
You know? You could see that sometimes in our communities. Like, we want to, you know. And then head of DHS at the time said, well,
What's a VHS?
DHS, so Department of Human Services. So like child protection. Sorry,
okay,
to
sorry.
Acronyms we get when we've lived in that world. But they told him, well, good luck. Well, because we can't pay people enough to do, you know, we're struggling in foster care. So more power to you. I think that's great. You think the church is going to rally and do that. And so his model was to reach the faith communities. Because, right, our core values are the biblical values, love God, love others, right? Love your neighbor. Those core values, that greatest commandment, is he wanted to work from that. That's what the church was called to do. The government was not called to do it. And that's why sometimes when it's the government, there's a lot of red tape and not a lot of love. And I say that with all due respect because I worked for the county. So he started working in the faith community. And we are now up to 1.2 million nights of children in safe home, safe care, called Safe Nights of Care, over 70,000 hostings, 100 chapters across the United States. This is over 20 years ago now. We're working in Uganda, Philippines, Thailand, Hong Kong, Canada, the UK. And I mean, just unbelievable that that's 20 years.
So how did you get connected with the national office then? I mean, I know you're in Larimer County and you're doing your work there. When did the switch get flipped for you of, did you start the chapter here?
I did.
So when did that happen? When did you say, look, someone's got to do something. I got this holy discontent. I don't know what to do with it. This is what I'm going to, like, tell me a little bit about that.
So it was before COVID. A family navigator from House and Neighborly Services, so Loveland, came over to, you know, talk about resources with our after hours team. We would have Monday meetings. We'd invite, you know, different community resources in. So as caseworkers, we would know about these things. And he just kind of off the cuff, like, what resource would help you guys? And kind of the general consensus among my team was we'd love host homes. So when we're out at 3 o'clock in the morning and we don't have aunt, uncle, grandma, grandpa to step in and say, I'm going to help out. Or we can't find nobody's picking up the phone at 3 o'clock in the morning, even foster families. One, we have a stopgap. Two, we don't know if foster care is really needed, is there a stopgap? Like, could there be a host family that could say yes, so we could sort out the details and take some time to figure out where is maybe aunt and uncle, where is grandma, grandpa, without having to open a court case? And it's almost like that swing, once that door is open, it's hard to close it again, once that process is started. And so ironically enough, I am not one of those people that start things, but I did feel it on my heart enough, God placed it on my heart enough to follow the H&S navigator over to his office that next week and ask him, like, were you serious? Like, what do you think about creating something like that? And I, of course, ran with, okay, I want homes to take in single moms that don't know how to parent and help mentor them. And I want this and I want this. And he's like, let's slow it down, sis. You know, and I always call him an instigator, maybe an inspirator, somewhere in there, because he really drove my heart of wonder. And he's like, well, let's think it through. You know, let's meet again. Let's talk again. And I got home that day and I Google searched host homes near me and found Safe Families in Denver and started reading up on it. And I was like, wow, this exists. I've been doing casework for 6 years and this exists already. Like, what would we do if we brought, could we bring it here? And he called the director at the time, Marcy, and she came up, I think it was 2019. It was right before COVID. And she presented to all our leadership. We did a presentation to foster kinship director, DDMs, which is deputy division managers of child welfare. And that's great. I think it's going to start. I'm kind of ironically thinking, all right, well, I did something good. Maybe I'll be the liaison. Maybe I'll get a raise. That'd be cool. You know, brought this resource done, you know, kind of thinking everything was all set. And nothing happened. COVID happened. So we walk into COVID. I've almost really forgotten about it. I had done throughout my career a lot of tough things. Got called out to do a removal. And it was evident because we did research at our desks before going to a hospital because we weren't allowed to stay at a hospital during COVID. It was evident that there was a lot of stuff for this mom. And a lot of hardship, a lot of trauma, a lot of stuff she didn't deserve as a kid. I just remember being that the point that God changed my heart. Just seeing her fear of me and the love she had for her child. And that was the moment I went home and I did the praying, like I told you about earlier, and I felt God put it on me. That's not enough this time. And the next morning I called the state director again and I'm like, where is this at? You know, where are we going with this? What did the county, you know, where is it at? And what would this look like if I had this type of situation? And she goes, well, in Denver, we'd probably have 5 people that would say yes. And so I'm like, all right, maybe not for this, but maybe for all the others that are going to come down, because I knew my job wasn't, I knew that that was going to happen over and over again. how could I resource us? And so during COVID, I joked that she must have been like, well, good luck reaching out to the churches that are all closed. Maybe she wasn't. She's this wonderful individual. She's like, you find a church to partner with you, I'll find us the money. So kind of, what do they call it? Cart before the horse type of situation. And I went out calling and Zoom meeting with every church, you know, emailing. I remember one church telling me, our foster care program isn't even up. I mean, we're not doing that ministry right now, like not right now. And then finally landed with a small church that was in the House of Neighborly Services building that Greg, the instigator, connected me to. And we went out on a Wednesday night, September of 2020, presented to their Wednesday night team. And small church, 12 people said yes. We launched Safe Families. I got asked to be the family coach supervisor at the time, which is code for you're going to do everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's kind of where our story landed.
Nothing like starting a new chapter in the midst of COVID.
Oh, it was tough. But you know what I saw? And I don't know, maybe you see this here in Fort Collins. A lot of beautiful things started during COVID.
Yeah.
Well,
when you have that downtime, you can think about innovative ways. You can think about the kinds of change that need to be brought to a space. I know my own leadership journey started here in Fort Collins slightly before COVID. And although you would never wish like a global pandemic on anyone,
no. Yeah.
The aftermath of that was a whole bunch of new beginnings. Yeah. And so that is kind of, there are redemption stories in the midst of, you know, some really hard couple of years for sure.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about then if you're trying to keep kids safe and families together, what does that look like? I mean, how, I know you've talked a lot about preventative measures, but how, like if you were to imagine a situation or a family that you would interact with as an organization, what would all like play into that? Well, how would that play out on kind of a anecdotal basis?
So we get referrals from all our community partners, the county. That was a beautiful blessing to have already built a career there and have that relationship already built, because nationally, you know, those relationships need to be built. So they're one of our biggest referral sources. We're now starting that in Weld too.
And when would they refer? Like, because to your own point, right, you're trying to respond before there's a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like seeing some rumblings, or they're like, hey, this could, if this doesn't go, if this gets unchecked, you know, like it could lead to something else. So this is the time. And then they would reach out to you guys?
Yeah. Or? So trying to keep kids in home. So we have what's called the preventative work that we do, like early on, to try to resource and support families that maybe don't have. I mean, you and I, Jeff, could probably think of 5 people we could call if we needed help right now, but maybe families that don't have that. So they would call us to offer that support. I remember going out to the county and presenting Safe Families when it launched, and somebody on my old team saying, man, everybody needs a family friend. That's one of the roles our volunteers do, which is somebody to just have coffee with and share your successes and also your hardships, and have that person to call when you need somebody. And so, you know, there was that. And then we also do what's nationally called edge of care. Like, okay, that situation I talk about where maybe we need a host family, maybe we don't have to use foster care, you know, to not open that doorway. And so EduCare is like, okay, could we host temporarily? And while families can focus without the stress of also trying to take care of all their kids, could we host temporarily so they can get back on their feet? The beautiful thing and difference, I think, to make clear about us in foster care is parents never lose custody. They have to choose, even when they're with the county, to voluntarily work with Safe Families. It has to be of their heart. We can't force them. We can't make them. If they decide tomorrow they don't want to work with us, that's okay. At the core of what we do too is build these teams of volunteers within the church, because who knows better and who's better gleaned to care for families than the church. And so we build these, what we call circles of support within the church. So the host family that can host temporarily if needed, the family coach who will really work with the parent or the host family to find the resources that are needed to make sure parents are stable and supported. So then that incorporates all our lovely community partners in Larimer County and in Fort Collins. The family friend that can take a mom to work or take a kiddo to counseling because mom and dad both work 9 to 5 and can't get the kiddo to the 1 o'clock counseling appointment. And then the resource friends that will provide playpens, diapers, wipes, you know, gas card if we're struggling to pay, fuel up the car. So we build this network for families. You know, and they wrap around. And then the hope is, I think our hope is that, you know, say families will go away and they have this network now. They have their core group of volunteers that will walk alongside like a family. And then ultimately, potentially, if they're open to it, maybe they get resourced by the whole church that we're partnered with. And we've seen that happen, which is a really beautiful thing.
Well, this is, I mean, this is something we talk a lot about at Love Foco, that if some of these crisis moments or these situations that we're talking about where we want to intervene, just our heart is compelling us to intervene. If all of those things could be solved with money, America would have figured this out a long time ago, because there's plenty of money around. I mean, our nation is a incredibly wealthy nation. If it was as simple as just writing a check, these things would be solved, but it's not. Although sometimes there are financial hardships that have to be addressed. I hear in the way that you're talking about this, also relational equity and social equity, emotional equity, mentorship, and the ability to build these relationships and have a community around a family that's struggling. And again, having to make trades that some people never have to face. And there's just so much more that's needed than a simple, you know, check or a dollar amount, that it sounds like you guys are doing a really good job of intervening in those kind of second and third spaces as well.
Well, and for me, I might be biased, but it's the relationship that is core. Like, it just is really, really key. And I think in society nowadays, we get so used to, okay, we have connections, right? We have connections on social media. I remember even searching through a mom's social media account and her 400 and some friends for possible placement. Well, they aren't solid relationships sometimes, you know, that, you know, you've got a lot of friends on there, but will they really show up when you need them? And so building this core group of relationships, it's almost, for me, like I remember as a kid, you know, you had those family gatherings where your cousins and your aunts and your, you know, you had these big group of family reunions of people that come, and that's kind of not, it doesn't happen as much.
Well, it's even your story. I mean, even your story of when I was a single mom, I met other single moms and we relied on one another. We supported one another. And there's this kind of co-laboring to make it to the next step and the next stage in our life. And not everybody has that. Not everybody has that kind of built-in system and relational network. And I mean, social media, now they're even saying you can be friends with AI. The Gemini can be your friend. Gemini is not going to watch your kids. Okay, so you are in trouble. You need some real humans in your life that you can lean on and that can lean on you as well.
And so that for me was the gap that was missing. I mean, we have a lot of resources. That's another beautiful thing about Fort Collins, another beautiful thing about our area. We have lots of resources. I can resource families with housing needs, with furniture, with Christmas gifts, with Thanksgiving. I mean, look at the SNAP issues that we had and how many people across Fort Collins. It was beautiful to see that would step up and offer resources to these families. But what we noticed is, like, how are our 9 to 5 families getting to that resource during 9 to 5 hours? So how could we step in and help them? Or how is the mom that doesn't have a car get to the food bank?
Right.
So it's still the core thing of that is your relationship. If you don't have the relationships, it still could be really, really hard to get what you need.
If you're working that 9 to 5, you need to demonstrate that you are a reliable, hardworking individual. And if you can't make it to work sometimes because of a family emergency, you can be misperceived as not reliable, not hardworking, even though you have way more grit than the average person. You just, there's an emergency, and it's pulling you away from some of these things. And then if that stacks up, you could, I guess, worst case scenario, lose that job. But it's hard to even get promoted within mm-hmm. that system, to the point where now I'm actually getting a little bit ahead. Now I can purchase some things that my family needs. I can get ahead on bills, mm-hmm. things like that. And you know, one promotion is rarely enough, especially living in Northern Colorado, because the cost of living is just tough.
Yeah, I had a caseworker tell me, as we're trying to figure out housing for a mom one time, I was like, "It's unaffordable," and she goes, "I can't afford it."
Yeah.
And here's somebody with a degree that's working in a profession,
professional services,
struggling to make. I mean, my kids, when they look for studio apartments, it's starting at what, $1,300 maybe, is the cheapest. So yeah, it's
that's
hard.
Not the price in Mitchell, South Dakota.
No.
I can promise you that. Well, one of the things that I'm really excited, even just like sitting down and talking with you, is because at Love Foco, we're trying to create a collaborative approach where nonprofits can be connected with one another, and we can use the best resources that each nonprofit has, which of course is it's physical needs, it's emotional needs, it's spiritual needs, and it's just the relational networks and the ability to kind of surround one another in that space is what I'm excited about, what you guys are doing and the ways that maybe our organizations will be able to serve one another in the future. But for everyone listening, we can wrap the conversation up here. I'm just curious, how could individuals listening to this support what you're doing? I'm sure there's volunteer opportunities. You're a nonprofit, which I always tell people doesn't mean there's no money involved. It just means there's no profit involved. So tell us a little bit about ways we can give, ways that we can support, and we'll make sure to link all of this in our service.
So there's a beautiful thing. When this first started, it was me part-time. I worked for the county as well. Low budget, fantastic. Also too much work for one person to do part-time. I've now got more staff. I've got five, there's five of us together. So our budget is high.
Yep.
And we're tasked to raise it ourselves. So even though we have a national organization that provides oversight, we do all our own fundraising here. Of course, there's the end of the year ask. You can go to Safe Families Northern Colorado. Just do a simple Google search and donate to our Safe Families chapter here in Northern Colorado. Monthly donors is huge because that provides stability. So if you feel called to anything I've said today or want to step in that way, monthly donor is fantastic. Even if it's just a cup of coffee a month, you know, $10 at Starbucks, those add up.
Especially like you said, that monthly donation that it allows a nonprofit to kind of rely on and say, okay, this is what we can count on. This is where we can go. Now projections for our annual budget get a little bit easier. I'm not sure people always realize that. The one-time gifts are great too. I mean, if you're choosing between nothing and a one-time, do a one-time, but, but the monthlies, they really do help kind of sustain a budget over the long haul, which I have to imagine is really important for you, because you're not just meeting with a family once. You're building these relationships and these mentoring networks, and that's going to take time.
Well, and we constantly have to grow. I will say Fort Collins right now, we're skiffing a wait list all the time for our families. We need more volunteers. So also on our website. So if you feel called to a volunteer role, please reach out, talk to one of us, even if it's just a cup of coffee to see what's out there. We'd love to meet with you. As far as other funding, you know, fundraising efforts, I remember a pastor telling me, God will grow you in fundraising. I'm like, oh, I don't want him to grow me in fundraising, but he is.
If you can sell steak door to door.
I know, but I did not want to go back to fundraise. I assure people, like, and I got to the core of my heart, I'm not asking for me. I'm asking for every family that we serve. And we've served a lot of families. We try to all, I mean, the two people that screen referrals, we have a heart to serve. It's really hard to say no. And if we say no, we're trying to connect them with everybody we know in the community to make sure they're served in some way. Anyways, and other fundraising campaigns, because I know we have to wrap up. So we have moved our big gala, it's our fourth annual gala, to February. So February 27th at the Drake Center, we'll be doing our gala. It is transformational. We had last year a pastor speak. City Light Church was our first partner church here in Fort Collins. They also launched their church plan at the same time, Safe Families. So we watched each other grow together. So that pastor spoke about how it transformed the church. We also had a host home speak. We had somebody from Larimer County DHS, a supervisor, speak about how we needed to build this community for the people they served. And then we also had a mom speak who was actually about to have a baby last year about how it transformed her life, having safe families around. So that gala is coming up on the 27th. We last year, so if you're a runner, I'm a runner at heart. It was always on my bucket list, even from starting Safe Families, to do a 5K. We moved our annual walk to a 5K this last year. We coined it the hottest 5K in Colorado because it was actually the hottest day in June, not That's because awesome. It was the hottest event. But a way to really acknowledge our community is last year's model for our 5K is we invited as many community partners out to have a booth and share with anybody who came to our 5K. And we want to continue to grow that. So even like where we're at next year with Love Foco, would love for you guys to have a presence there for us to grow it together. And so that's a really, really fun event. We have
This is one thing Gemini can help people with, or ChatGPT. You can literally type in couch to 5K.
Yeah.
Give me a training, you know, and they will come up with opportunities for you to be able to stumble across that finish line.
Well, and it was 100 degrees. And my biggest worry the day of was how many people we were going to have to get medical care for. It was hot.
Yeah.
But we also had Phil Stacy out, who he was an American Idol alum, and he came out and performed. And I felt really bad because I'm like, oh, so hot. Not a lot of people showed up. And he wants to come back. He's just like, could feel that God was at work.
Yeah.
And so that we may not have had thousands of people there, but we had, God was at work in the moment. So things help grow what we're all trying to do. And that's to love Foco and love well and take care of the people that I just want to see a world where everybody feels like they have community.
I love that. Roxy, thank you so much for your time. I mean, a lot of what we're trying to do at Love Foco, particularly this podcast and show, is celebrate stories, celebrate organizations and lives who are making a difference in our community one life at a time. I hear that in your story. I hear that in your organization. For everyone listening, we'll put all kinds of links in our show notes, ways that you can get linked up to volunteer, become a monthly donor of your great work, look into the gala, or even, you know, put on those running shoes and participate in that 5K. Thank you for that information. And just thanks for what you're doing in our community.
Yeah.
I know a lot of lives are going to be changed. And so grateful for your work.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Love Foco Show. If today's conversation inspired you, share it with a friend who loves Fort Collins as much as you do. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And leave us a review. It helps more people discover us. To learn more about Love Foco and find opportunities for loving our city one life at a time, visit lovefoco.com. For now, keep loving Fort Collins well.